Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I'm going to go on record and say I've never given anyone any deadly lipstick. I've not done that.
No.
Plan not to.
Welcome to the first episode of Women Tech Charge, the new podcast from the Evening Standard, with me, Anne-Marie Imafidon. In this series, I'm speaking to some of the smartest women in the world about how they're taking charge of not only their own lives via their tech careers, but those of thousands and sometimes millions of other people. In this episode, I'm talking to a woman who's a senior leader at GCHQ, which is one of the UK's intelligence agencies alongside MI5 and MI6. She's not James Bond or Q, but she's a real-life powerhouse working to protect us all. Are you sitting comfortably? Let's get started. I'm sat here at a top secret location in West London called Northcliff House, opposite a woman who is keeping us all safe and ensuring that cyber analysts have the right tools and kit and also know how to use them. She's a deputy director at GCHQ, which for those not in the know is the government communications headquarters, and they sit alongside MI5 and MI6. She has worked on topics as diverse as child sexual exploitation, drug busts and cybercrime. Welcome to the podcast, Q. Beth.
It's lovely to be here.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for agreeing to do this as well and opening up the secrets and telling everyone. I know you're putting your life in danger and my life in danger.
It's in your hands.
Yes. And those are the listeners. All of you are now going to be in trouble. How would you describe what you do? Because I spoke about a lot of different topics there in the intro. Mm-hmm. How would you describe what you do?
So my current job, it's about looking at the technical tools mm-hmm. that our analyst workforce need. So the actual kit, but also how they use it. And then, of course, the skills that they need to acquire to be able to do their jobs effectively and making sure that they can have really meaningful careers when they come in the building.
Okay.
And so that GCHQ is a decent career option in addition to making sure they've got the kit they need to do their jobs.
So they're not, you know, almost like, they're the opposite of Johnny English, I guess. Johnny English has all the kit and no idea. But these are people who like have all the ideas and have all the kit that works.
We hope they've got the gear and the idea.
And the idea. Yeah. All the gear and all the
idea. All the ideas.
And how does one end up being Q?
I have to caveat that I'm not Q.
You just described Q.
You can call me
Q.
B.
B. Sorry, yeah, there we go, B.
Pick a different letter of the alphabet.
Yeah, how does one end up being Q or B or a letter of the alphabet only?
So there's, I think, a myriad ways in, which okay. is one of the things I want to say. So absolutely, if you're a top flight mathematician or you're doing computer science or a STEM degree, that's one way in and we really value and want to get our hands on those people. But that's not the way that I got in, and okay. it's not the way that a lot of people got in. Mm-hmm. So I did do a degree, although that's not a requisite to come and work for us. Mm-hmm. But mine was in the deeply technical field of philosophy.
Oh.
So I spent a bunch of years at university being immersed in all of these great thinkers.
Okay.
And at that point, I had no idea what I was going to do.
Right.
But I somehow found my way into working for one of the most technical organisations in the nation.
It's funny how life does that sometimes.
Yeah, it throws us a few curveballs.
How did you find your way? Did they tap you on the shoulder one night when you're walking in an alleyway?
So I can't work out if it was the best bit of reverse psychology or if the bloke that I thought to just genuinely thought I didn't have a chance. I did the very glamorous thing of wandering around a student careers fair. Do you remember those?
Yes.
And I spoke to this bloke at GCHQ, and once we'd established that it wasn't a bank, which is a common misconception, I asked him if there were any jobs for people like me. And when he found out I didn't have a language or a maths degree, he said, "Oh, there's a graduate management trainee, but you won't get in on that." And so either that was
charming
genius psychology because I went home furiously and applied, or not. But either way, that is the reason that I applied and got in.
So you just applied?
I just applied.
What does applying look like? Is it like trying to get into Oxford?
No, it's really not.
Okay.
It's it is competitive, which
right.
is brilliant, and I want to encourage that.
We'd hope it's competitive, to
I'd
be
have
honest.
To say, I don't know if it's like applying to Oxford because I didn't go to Oxford.
Okay. But you know those random questions? Because we get sent books all the time. I was in the office yesterday and I found the GCHQ Puzzle Book 2, which is now in all good bookstores.
This is where I break out into
it.
A cold sweat. You're going to ask me a puzzle,
and
aren't
I've been
you?
Looking through it. I did do the Oxford thing, but I did maths, so I didn't get asked those random, you know, how many hamburgers are there in the world? Which, no offence to Oxford, but that's the thing. What is the process actually? Do they just ask you these questions in the book, or how does it work?
So I wouldn't comment on how the mathematicians get assessed, but I don't think that it is just the questions in the book. It's like applying for a job. So
okay.
You'll do an online form.
Right.
I think you do an assessment centre. You certainly did when I went along.
Oh.
And it was a lot like the assessment centres that my friends described.
Yeah.
You just get asked questions on how you have handled situations,
okay.
What your motivations are, why
yeah.
you're interested in the job. It's pretty ordinary.
Okay.
It's just you get an extraordinary job at the end of it.
I don't believe you.
Well, here's where I drop into my spy voice and say...
Do they not have to do like a, I don't know, clearance? Do they not have to test if you can keep a secret?
Ah, now
is
that
it not
comes
like
afterwards.
Big Brother where they have like secret missions on the assessment centre?
Well, clearly I can't keep a secret because a microphone in my face. I'm looking nervously. It's gone after this. So what happens after that is you then go through something called developed vetting, which is where they look at if you're able to maintain a security clearance.
Right, okay.
So there is that element of you need to then get and maintain a security clearance.
Right.
Which means that essentially the trust of the nation is placed in you to look after our most sensitive information.
Does anyone ever drop out of security clearance?
Yeah, people do.
Do you get moved up? Is it like a game where you get moved up and down levels depending on what you do?
Not quite, but that would be awesome.
It'd be really good.
Yeah.
I have always wondered. So I was thinking about this actually when I was preparing for this about, so you're a manager.
Yeah.
And so it's almost like, are you able to manage? You're only able to manage certain people based off the clearance that you have.
So it's with us, we've got everyone needs the top secret clearance to be working in our building.
Every single person?
Every single person.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone. But that's what makes it wonderful is you have to have the clearance to get past the razor wire.
Yeah.
But once you're past the razor wire, everyone does. So there's actually a culture of tremendous openness. Loads of collaboration. We'll be in the coffee shops having like top secret coffees. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Oh, I love my job. It's wicked. And
it
legit
coffee.
Is.
Does
You'll
it have
be,
like secret
yeah.
stuff in it?
If they do, then the people who are looking at the baristas are keeping that a secret. But they've got secret clearances too. What it manages to contribute to is genuinely an air of openness and of collaboration.
Yeah.
And if you're working in a tech community,
you
know
that
you desperately need that.
Yeah.
So we can't afford to have people locked away
out.
Behind doors.
Yeah.
So the way we manage it is we put a lot of barbed wire around the outside, which you mostly forget. And once you're through that, everyone's incredibly open and incredibly collaborative.
I guess the other thing is you don't have any phones, so you have to talk to each other anyway.
Yeah, it's true.
There's
no Facebook inside the wire.
None at all. You don't even have your own Facebook internally.
We do not have Facebook internally.
Okay.
Can I say that? Yes. We do not have Facebook internally.
I guess it's almost a good thing that you don't have anything.
Yeah, there are fewer there are fewer upsetting photo tagging incidents when the image is not flattering to you. I'm not going to lie, there's not none. There's some corporate imagery of me, which I do not look my finest. But it's not as bad as on Facebook.
Do people go by first names only in the building as well? Or because you're all clearance, you can all know everything about each other?
So there's no just using first names for us. We pretty much use our full names.
You do.
And it's because it's quite a tight-knit community. You do know quite a lot about each other.
How many people are there?
It is actually well into the thousands. It just doesn't feel like that when you work there, because we've got a real sense of community. So you'd get to know your teams and your wider teams. And we work across like operations and engineering and other departments. So it feels very,
very small,
like a little village.
What is it like in terms of, because you've got this stereotypical portrayal of a queue or of a whatever
that?
Else it might be.
What is it? What's the stereotype?
Like a spy.
What's that
person.
Like?
It's a bit nervy.
I suppose I was a bit nervy
in a
coming
suit.
In actually. Not in a suit.
I don't know. You just don't imagine you'd be able to sit on next to a spy on a bus maybe. I don't know. You seem quite... normal.
Quite a good chance in Gloucestershire.
Personable. Oh, really?
Yeah. Quite a good
in
chance.
In Gloucester, everyone of us. What kind of person works at GCHQ? Like, do you have women there? Do you have young people there in addition to the old? Do you have people in the middle? Do you have, I don't know.
We have all kinds of people working for GCHQ. Like, if you walk around what we call the street, you'll see literally people with mohawks, and you'll see people in three-piece suits.
Do you have people with mullets?
I've actually got a bit of a mullet at the moment because
really?
I'm growing my hair out. It's been an emotional time.
Yeah,
I did not like having a mullet. If you have a mullet, that's an awesome
shout
choice.
Out to you, yeah.
For me, it was an unavoidable stage.
Okay.
I think so. We take diversity really seriously, and that sounds like a buzzword, and I feel rubbish saying it, but it's true. And I wouldn't come on a podcast and say that if it wasn't true.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen the department really shift even in the time that I've been there. So when I've worked in some deeply technical areas, and I've had the experience a lot of being the only woman in the room.
Okay.
Which you must have had.
Yeah.
A fair bit of that.
I'm weird though, because I don't notice. Because I kind of look out and I see everyone else, but I don't see the odd one out. Whereas I'm sure for all of them, because I'm normally the young black female who likes Nando's from East London. So there's always a lot of things about me that stand out.
It's a great way of looking at it. when I'm in those rooms, I'm not the odd one out to me.
No, you're not. You never are. If you're not very perceptive, although I guess you must be perceptive if you work at GCHQ. But you know what I mean.
I just think that's a fantastic way of looking at it. I've had that experience, and I've had that kind of like, how do you make your voice heard and all that stuff.
Okay.
And I'm seeing the numbers really slowly shift, and it's something that we really deeply care about. And we did a really cool thing last year. So with a couple of other deputy directors from the operational area, we just got ourselves together and looked at, we happened to take a look at, I think it was gender equality for the department. And we were like, actually, people always say this is really tricky, but we approached it as we would an operational problem or a mission problem.
Right.
And we took that kind of skill set to this.
Mm.
And we worked with our HR department to come up with what's currently our gender equality strategy. And it was drawing on like some fantastic work. There is a book by a behavioural economist called Iris Benet. I don't know if you've come across it. It's a brilliant book. It's called What Works.
Okay.
And she's based at Harvard, and she's done loads of research into what actually has an impact. It happens to be on gender equality, but we care across all of the protected characteristics.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And of course for all humans, because the more open a workplace is, the better it is for
the humans,
all of
there.
The humans.
Exactly.
A really good bellwether for that is how many women and how many people of colour and how many people from the LGBTQ community are in there and happy being themselves and flourishing.
Mm.
But it's good for everyone. That's something we really take to heart. We've got a strategy that really cares about it. It's actually a big bit of my job.
Okay.
So on top of caring about operational kit and how our analysts are doing, I also care about what our diversity and inclusion is like. And that is true of all of my colleagues in mission jobs. If you're a leader at GCHQ, you care about diversity and it's a part of your job. I'm really proud of that. It feels like you're
the
at the heart.
The country is dependent on you to do it. I think it's one of those things that there's so much data and so many different types of people that you're protecting and different types of situations that are born out of different perspectives. That means that actually you probably can't do your job that well if you don't have... It's like the Legally Blonde kind of thing of like, you know, just because she knew about perms... that's how she was able to solve that case. And if she wasn't there, then, you know, the wrong person would have been,
yeah,
you know, whatever it was. So I think it's one of those things where you kind of do need different types of people to do the job well. Yeah. So it's quite important.
And it just, it's the right thing to do as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm a big fan of all of the research that shows kind of how teams become more effective and do their objectives better when you're in balanced teams. I also don't lose sight of the fact it's just the right thing to do, is that people should be equal and they should have a chance to be in, a chance to be a spy and be in the heart of the security establishment. And you shouldn't be put off from that just because you happen to be gay or you happen to be a woman. And it's something we take really seriously. And it's something that's cared about right across the department, which makes me proud to work there.
It's like Incredibles. Boom. All kinds of different people, yeah. All kinds of different skills.
All kinds of different superpowers, right?
Do you have like an Incredibles family? Do you have like a GCHQ family? Is there a family? Is there anyone who works at GCHQ and their spouse is at GCHQ and they've got a kid that works at GCHQ?
Yeah.
Really?
Totally.
They're like, yeah, the Incredibles, but the GCHQables.
My wife works at GCHQ.
Does she really? Yeah. Did you meet at work?
Totally met at work.
Can you tell us the story? Did your eyes meet over the secret coffee?
I will tell you the story. I was part of a course that she was attending. And
weren't focusing on the syllabus.
I came in late and joined her group, and everyone else had introduced themselves, and then the facilitator was supposed to introduce everyone else, but they didn't know who I was because I'd come in late and sat down. So the first words she heard me say were, and they were like, "And this is," and there was a pause, and I went, "Beth, International Woman of Mystery." And she didn't hate me. And listener, she married me.
Oh,
yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's a good opening line.
Is it? I don't know.
No.
I think that it could have all gone wrong.
Really?
Yeah, I think she just laughed at me.
She liked what she heard, though.
Well, it went all right. We are married. So that was the ending.
That's
of that.
Like a thing. That's really sweet. That's sweet. That's a really nice little story. That should be like the next GCHQ campaign. Come and meet your wife. Because you're all international. If you like International People of Mystery. Oh my gosh, are GCHQ people on that? You know the Special Forces dating site thing?
No, I do not know about that.
Oh my gosh. Should be like a GCHQ Tinder.
Feel like there's just
like a classified Tinder. If you want to date someone that's an international person of mystery,
I'm not going to add that to the list of kit that we're going to develop.
Listeners, you should do that. Someone should make that app. I can't even think of what we'd call it. GCH Kinder. Quumble.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So has anyone ever said, you know, call me Q or call me M, or picked a different letter that's not in a Bond movie?
They have not in our organisation, although it would be great to have a cool nickname. So
you're a deputy director at GCHQ, yep, which means that we probably shouldn't really know everything about what you did last Tuesday. How much can you tell me? Is it 9 to 5?
No.
I guess it's flexible.
It's flexible.
So what's your hour, typical hour?
It really varies. So, and this is something I'd recommend. I try and work with my energy.
Okay.
So some days I might be in at 8. And work right through if the energy's flowing until like it would vary between like 4 and 6.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool.
So 8 till 6, what do you actually physically do?
So my job's like a lot about talking to people.
Okay.
So I think it would look really similar to anyone else who's leading a big team,
right,
or doing strategy.
Yep.
The difference is the content of what we're talking about.
Yep.
So you would see me sitting in meetings and you would see me drinking coffee with people. And I'm doing the standard kind of, where do we need to be in the future and what does that look like and what do we need to invest in and what do our people need and how do we look after our teams? The difference is that we're doing that on top secret material. That's what makes it, for me, really, really cool and interesting. What we're doing, which you'll appreciate as technology changes, gets harder and harder every day.
Mm.
And you really need to be able to work as part of a team to crack the kinds of challenges we've got, because no single human can do that alone.
Mm.
However good you are, you will need the support of a team. So being able to get that team mentality hat on, understand that it's bigger than the sum of its parts, is huge for us.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I see and try to make sure is at the heart of what I do is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's a superpower. I think if you can remain curious, whether that's about how things work or why things are going wrong in the heat of them going wrong, or how you can be better or what you can learn, that's going to see you through so much. So I internally, when I'm recruiting, I look for that kind of curiosity in people who are constantly learning.
Mm-hmm.
But also I try and make sure it's there for myself.
Okay.
I found you can't be both curious and angry, and being angry is almost never helpful, and being curious is very helpful.
Okay.
So when things are hard at work and stressful, or we've just got a really complex problem that's stretching to solve, I try and just put curiosity right at the heart of it and try and understand why this is hard, what we might do differently and how we can come at it differently. And that isn't just a good technique, it kind of changes the way you're approaching it and the energy you bring into the room. So that's my secret tip.
Be
really curious, and the more stressed you get, try and get really, really curious about what's going on instead. That's definitely helped me.
So what is it like to work there? What you've said, it's quite close knit and it's quite a nice open environment.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, do you have things like flexible working? Like, tell me something that might surprise me about the way things work.
So it's a bunch of really good contradictions.
Okay.
Because on the one hand, you're working on really high octane, unbelievable stuff. And sometimes I take a step back from what we're working on or we have worked on, and I pinch myself, because you're right at the heart of the leading events of the world, and you're contributing something to it that is unique, and that is phenomenal.
Mm.
It's also sometimes a little bit pressurized, and it is really high octane. So there's that element to it. But then on the other hand, we've got some tremendous policies around flexible working. So being able to work hours that suit you and in a pattern that suits you in pretty much every job.
But you have to be in the office, so there's not too much working from home.
No, so we're we're actually able to work from home quite a lot as well. Obviously not really on classified things, but chunks of our work, if you're looking at strategy or a little bit away from the operational sphere, or if you're learning, so if you want to take an afternoon off and teach yourself some Python or something like that, then that's really supported, and we encourage people to find patterns that really work for them.
Okay.
So we can get the best out of them and they can get the benefits of being able to work in this mission environment, but also still have a meaningful work-life balance.
And work from home.
And so, yeah, sometimes in some contexts. Sounding pretty good.
It is sounding really good.
And it's almost, not like an Oxford interview.
Almost too good to be true. No, it's not like an Oxford interview. But I'm going to ask you a question since you said that. And this question is the very first question. So no pressure if you're not going to get it. You might already know it because I think you've been involved in some of the book writing. This is the GCHQ Puzzle Book 2. Brand new edition, came out in 2018.
For the listeners at home, I've got a frozen smile of horror on my face.
She didn't tell me. You already have the job though. So even if you don't get this right, I think you're going to be fine. I'm looking at everyone else in the room from her team.
They're not looking that sure.
They're laughing. Because that doesn't bode well. You've got to have faith in your colleagues.
Supportive
work environment. Getting thumbs up now. Okay, so this is called The Early Bird. Do you know this one?
No, I have no clue what's coming.
Right. The Early Bird. What connects Skipper, Mumble, Wheezy, Pinger, Tux, and Feathers McGraw? The Early Bird. What connects Skipper, Mumble, Wheezy, Pinger, Tux, and Feathers McGraw? B, what is your answer?
Well, so it would be too easy to immediately give you the answer, which of course I could work out for myself if I chose, when instead I'd want to embody the values that we've got, which is that I'd reach out to some people who are fabulous at this kind of thing and get them to help me solve it.
This is not Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. There's no Ask a Friend.
There's always Phone a Friend at GCHQ. There's always Phone a Friend.
Okay,
so I would embody the leadership that I've learned, and I'd reach out to the people who could...
the experts.
...could actually do this. Yeah, because I'm going to... Can I tap out? Is that all right? It's penguins. Also, it's penguins.
Did you know it's penguins?
No, I did not know it was penguins, but I'm very good at lip reading.
It is actually fictional penguins.
Oh.
From Madagascar, Happy Feet, Toy Story 2, Pingu, Linux and the Wrong Trousers.
I really need to up my... That was the last one, Feathers McGraw. I do remember him.
See, now, I don't know. If someone asked me that in an interview, I think I would get up and walk out.
No one would ask you that in an interview, like, I promise.
So that's what some people, or at least that's what I thought you did when I got sent this book from a mystery address as well, I must say. We didn't order it or anything, just turned up in the office. They know where we are. What do your parents think you do? Because it's not answering these puzzles all day.
I'm not sure what they actually think I do. And right. I'm sometimes frightened to ask the question because my parents are a little random.
Okay.
Hi, Mum, if you're listening.
Love parents.
She did once think it was a bit like Lord of the Rings. I'm not sure where that was from. But on a slightly more serious note, they do know where I work. They know which organisation. And close family and friends of mine do know where I work. And we don't have cover stories in the same way that some other agencies do. Which actually in some ways really helps, because it's if you move to Gloucestershire straight after university, it can be quite hard keeping up a pretense. So
have you ever been tempted to make up a cover story?
No.
Have you ever been in a situation?
No, you know, like how
when you go out to bars you have like a name, like a fake name that you tell people. I mean, you have a fake name in general anyway.
I don't.
B.
I think you have
Q.
like a cooler life than me if you're in bars with fake names.
No, you have to, it's because you don't want the person to find you again. So mine is Sarah.
Oh, you've told everyone now?
It doesn't matter. Because if you shout out Sarah in the street, I'm never going to turn around.
Oh.
And yeah.
I don't think I'm in as much demand in bars as you are.
No, but a cover story. Have you never just been like, you know, I work at GCSQ and actually I do all the kit? You'd ever been like, I'm going to make something up?
No. I'm like a lot more boring than I realised. It's taken doing a podcast. No. Mostly because I'm really bad at lying.
Or is it because the real story is actually kind of cool?
So I think what I try and do is, number one, is just avoid the questions in the first place if you can.
I see.
If you say vaguely that you work in IT,
yeah,
most people do not want to follow up that conversation, which is handy.
No, we want to change that. We want everyone to come and be a part of
so
the party.
That's a problem I'd love to have, that people are super interested if I say I'm in IT. And do you know what? Joking apart, that is changing.
Yeah.
So 10 years ago, if I said I was in IT security, people just dozed off.
Okay.
And now they kind of want to know what and what I think about stuff, which is pretty cool.
Security,
and that's awesome.
It's a big thing. There's a lot going on. This is a crazy world, and there's all kinds of cyber stuff going on.
And more people are interested in it, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and they do need to be interested in it. But you do other things other than IT security.
In GCHQ?
In life.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you do to relax?
I've been on a journey.
Uh-huh. This is good. I like it.
I think probably the word is like calming down.
Okay.
So for a good few years, my release was roller derby.
I like it.
It was pretty awesome.
And you never made a story up at roller derby about what you did.
I just like no
that
one.
That seems like the perfect kind of environment to be.
It's like Fight Club. Like if you're in roller derby, you talk about roller derby, and then you talk about roller skates, and then you talk about. The injuries do happen, but you talk in great detail about the kit you're going to buy when you get paid. What was brilliant about it was all the time I was playing roller derby, I had really quite intense operational jobs that I loved. But it was brilliant because I had to leave on time because there's a team that are quite leery and know how to push me over that depend on me turning up to training. So that's one thing. And the second thing is you just have to concentrate totally, because if you lose a moment of concentration in roller derby, you're upon the floor, probably hurting. So it takes you out of work properly. And by that point that you finish training, you're so exhausted, you just want to go home and eat. So.
And does work get quite stressful? So you said you're on a journey, actually. So what's the next step in the journey of roller derby?
It's a bit of a U-turn from a full contact sport, but I got a bit old for that, and I was taking a longer and longer to recover from games.
Right.
And so I did more yoga and less roller derby to the point that I retired. And yoga's just great for stretching and for helping you get over a lot of roller derby. But that kind of developed my interest a little bit in meditation. And I've been really interested in mindfulness and how that can help with your resilience at work, particularly in jobs like ours, which are very cerebral and very intense, and you're in your head a lot. And the stakes can be quite high. That is true about what we do. So things that you can do that help you to stay grounded, to react to the pressure in a way where it doesn't become negative and can kind of keep you in the game, and also help make sure that you can look after your people. And mindfulness has been really interesting for me on that.
Have you brought it into work? Is that because I know in a lot of different workplaces that's become a thing. I know there's a mental health first aider as well that we're trying to... Either it's been mandated or it's been legislated or it's like a new idea that's coming in. Is that something that's being embraced at GCHQ?
Yeah, so mental first aiders in particular is something that we are doing as a department, which I think is fantastic. So I really support that. At the moment with mindfulness, I use it personally quite a lot. And so I chatter away to anyone who's interested. But we've got a real push around wellness at the moment. And we take psychological safety and well-being really seriously because of some of the content of the topics that we look at. So I'm pretty sure that as I learn more about it, the organisation will be really open to having a conversation about if it's something we can integrate at work or not.
Does your philosophy ever come into it? And I say this because there's a lot of stuff, a lot of discussions I'm part of for technology and tech for good, and talking about the ethics of what we do and the fact that actually alongside things like coding or any other technical things that people are doing, we should be teaching philosophy so that then we don't build these robots that kill ourselves. Is it something that comes up for you even more so because of where you are? Because it's like, you know, you've given them this lipstick that's going to kill somebody, you know, so if they use it.
I'm going to go on record and say I've never given anyone any deadly lipstick. That's, I've not done that.
No.
Plan not to. But I think, so I am massively, although sometimes I joke about my degree and how the heck did I end up where I end up, but actually it gave me kind of two really powerful groundings. One is like training in logic. It was a bit of a shock to find out that I had to do formal logic when I got to uni. That was a bit of a horror. But
That's really early on in the course though, isn't it?
Yeah.
You should have looked at the syllabus before you applied.
They weed you out.
Yeah.
And I employed a bit of tenacity there, and I kept turning up, and I think they felt sorry for me, so they just made sure that I could learn
it.
And that is totally, if you're ever struggling with something, just keep turning up. You will get there. Believe you can learn it and keep turning up, you'll get there. But that kind of formal logic really helped me have some discipline about looking at things, and I think it helped me step back and approach things in a different way. And look at the components of parts and test assumptions. And then I think there is that ethical component of it. So integrity is something we talk about a lot at work, and it's huge to us. So we're very aware that we've got within law some incredible powers that we need to use on behalf of Britain and the British people. But with that comes tremendous responsibility. And so we do have really honest and meaningful discussions around ethics and how we apply it, and just not just law, but our policy is just enshrined and in everything we do. And that was, I remember when I joined, which is almost 15 years ago now, I went in expecting that.
Did you say 50?
15.
Yeah, okay.
I'm not like, say, got gosh, some magic youth serum. Yeah.
That might be another secret you guys
one
have
five.
In the building. Okay, cool, yeah.
Oh no, I let it slip. 5 decades, not true. I remember that the just being really impressed on like week one, the seriousness with which people took that, and feeling like actually I have joined an organisation where I'm not going to need to worry about my ethics.
Yeah, okay.
I take care of them and I think about them, but I feel really safe working where I work, that's taken seriously.
Because I imagine that's the other thing that people would consider or would be apprehensive about looking in, to be like, how do you know that, you know, if you are working on serious crime or if you are working on terrorism, how do you know that you're operating on the right side of good? It does become like a good versus evil kind of thing, doesn't it? It is a little bit Lord of the Rings, sort of.
Yeah, so I think we operate within one of the strongest oversight regimes in the world. And I can say what it feels like from the inside, which is it's really clear which side we're on. And it's really clear the kind of good that we're doing. And if you look at some of the topics that we work on, so child sexual exploitation and helping and supporting the police to tackle that, that's a really obvious case of where we're just straightforwardly doing good in the world.
So you mentioned the police there.
Yeah.
I want to go into a little bit more about
where you fit, where the police fits with GCHQ, fits with MI5, fits with MI6, fits with, I don't know if we're going to call it MI7 or whatever, there's maybe another secret element of what's going on there that we all shouldn't know. How does it fit together? Do you work together? Does it cross over? Because it's the only thing I've ever heard or seen is that you kind of sit in the middle of MI5 and MI6. It's kind of what I've heard.
So first up is it's a massively collaborative space. So one of the things I love about my job is that in any given week, I could well be working with MI5, with SIS. We might collaborate with law enforcement.
SIS.
Yep, Secret Intelligence Service. So okay. It's often known as MI6, I guess.
Oh, sorry. Right,
yeah, okay. Sorry, yep. That's my language.
That's all right.
I guess like a handy way of thinking about it is that the difference between us and MI6 is that we really concentrate on the comms technology.
Okay.
So if there's a need to kind of get to grips with a comms technology challenge to get intelligence or to defend, then that's probably us.
Okay.
And if it's more about working with humans to try and get that intelligence and that insight, then that's most likely to be MI6.
Okay.
And then the big difference between us and MI5 is that they tend to focus on the domestic threat. So you'll see them on terrorism, for example.
Yeah.
And we tend to look more towards foreign intelligence and overseas. Okay. That's a big cartoon.
Yeah.
But that's a helpful way of thinking about it.
And then someone said NCSC.
Yep.
Where does that fit?
That's the National Cybersecurity Centre.
Thank you very much.
And that is a part of us.
Oh, okay.
So we've got a couple of mandates. So we've got obviously the intelligence and the defend the nation in terms of keeping us safe from CT, from serious crime,
CT,
from other threats, counterterrorism.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the kind of keep the internet safe. So we're trying to do with the NCSC is help Britain stay safe online and operate securely. And that's really important for a number of reasons. And because of who we are as an organisation, we found that we had a lot of the expertise sat within our building. And so we formed the National Cybersecurity Centre, which is a part of GCHQ, but obviously has a much more open and forward-facing remit, so it feels a little bit different to work in there, and they've got a slightly different mission.
Fewer cover stories and more surnames at the NCSC, or not really?
I think there's actually more members of staff would be facing open. More members of staff would have a public profile there.
Okay.
But also just a lot more of what we do is available. So we want to get out and give people guidance there. So the NCSC will be sharing best practice. If you want to learn a bit more about how to keep safe online, they're a great resource.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got a slightly different feel to it than some of our more secret stuff, which we need to keep secret so that we can carry on keeping people safe.
Is there a hotline?
There is not, to my knowledge, a hotline. Oh,
so
my press office
engage,
looking a bit sad.
Like, no.
She might be the hotline.
If you need to engage, if you need to engage GCHQ, if you have a comms security dilemma, how do you call GCHQ? Enlist GCHQ? Rope in GCHQ? Like, how does if someone needs a kit, a piece of kit that you've put together, how do you know?
I'm going to try and answer this, and I think it might sound quite cool. If you need us, then we'll know.
So I can't call you.
I'm going to just spin that as really cool. No, you can't call us.
You can't. Who gives GCHQ work to do?
So it comes through central government.
Right.
So I
have to call Theresa, whoever it is at the moment when this comes out, Prime Minister.
Yeah, if you can call the Prime Minister...
Then Prime Minister will call.
Like, the Prime Minister definitely has the ability...
to call... Has the Prime Minister ever called you and been like, I need a lipstick to...
The Prime Minister has never called me to ask for a killer lipstick.
For a killer lipstick. Can you tell us if... Has the Prime Minister called you?
The Prime Minister has not called me.
Has not called you.
I feel sad now.
It will come, I'm sure. You're in the right place. And what's the hardest thing... So you're within the main GCHQ. What's the hardest thing, would you say, about your job?
So I had to think about this, and I think, honestly, the hardest thing is some of the decisions that we have to make.
Mm-hmm.
So like every industry and every department, our resource isn't infinite. So we can't take forward every single brilliant idea that would help in tech.
Yeah.
And we can't do every single operation that if our resource was infinite that we'd want to do. So we do have to make very real and very hard decisions about what to do with the resources that we've got.
Mm.
And that's probably the hardest thing that we have to do.
So it's almost like a what would Beyonce do?
I think that is a great, that's a great guide for life.
The equivalent, maybe not Beyonce. What would?
I don't know.
Tintin, Tintin a spy? Boudicca.
Well, she's just great, isn't
yeah,
she?
Yeah, she's British, right?
Yeah, she's British. Yeah, she'd be all right with the clearance.
What would Boudicca do? She yeah, would. What do you think? I mean, more of a warrior than an intelligence person, right, Boudicca?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if she turned up, she'd be a British citizen. I mean, we talked to security, but, you know.
She would. Who inspires you other than Boudicca?
I have to get her name right because in my head she's the magical space lady. But I think it is Dr. Maggie Adairan Pocock.
Maggie, really? Maggie Adairan Pocock? Yeah.
She's freaking awesome.
She's the coolest.
So the reason that I still remember seeing her for the first time on BBC Breakfast.
Oh, okay.
Because I was just rooted to the telly because I just felt so much enthusiasm coming from her about space. And I remembered all of my childhood dreams about wanting to like study the stars and be an astronomer.
Never too late.
Yeah. She makes me feel like that. And that's the thing I love about her is I think sometimes when you've got someone with like a glittering career who's really mastered their topic, they can use that knowledge a little bit to sort of prop themselves up.
Yeah.
And with her, I just feel like she's just giving it away in handfuls.
Yeah.
Like, be excited about this. This could be you. You can access this.
The other thing I really like about her, she's so open about being a mum, which I think often as well, when you think about space scientists or certain people, you almost forget that they're a human being behind or that, you know, they have other things. But with her, if you Google Maggie Adairan Pocock, so many of the images, I think her daughter's name is Hannah. I think it's Hannah, is always on her waist.
I did like, I watched, I remember seeing a video of her giving like a career talk or something.
Yeah.
And I loved that she had, I remember seeing her daughter with her and I thought, so many people talk about it, but she's doing it and she's demonstrating it and she's putting like that image out into the world. Yeah.
Like receiving awards on BBC Breakfast, everything with just Hannah just on her waist.
It. And I just think it would be, like I've only seen her on the telly and I listen to her and I feel like I could learn about space. And I just think that's a brilliant thing to aspire to is what if I can make... If I have an interaction with someone, they could leave in some way a bit more uplifted than when they met. And she really inspires me to do that.
Looking back on your career, is there anything you do differently?
So it actually isn't my career. When I was thinking about... So I love mistakes. Mm-hmm. Not at the time. Usually horrific at the time. But I love the learning that they bring. Mm-hmm. So when I'm thinking about what was hard or difficult, usually I'm really glad that I went through it. I'm a big fan of like growth mindset. I'm a big fan of seeking out and acting on feedback. Mm-hmm. So I don't have kind of career regrets in particular. But I do have a little... I wish I'd done an A-level in physics.
Okay.
And I will tell you why. Because I loved it as a subject, it made my brain tingle and I found it hard and I plugged my way through it and it opened my imagination up in ways that no other subject really did. But when it came to what to do for my A-levels, I went for the things that I thought I'd get A grades in, that I'd do the best possible I could and I'll get the top grades.
Yep.
And the reason I didn't take this subject that made my brain tingle was because I might get a B grade or a C grade. Mm. And it just makes me really sad that I missed out on 2 years of learning something fantastic.
It's never too late,
Beth. Because I thought I wouldn't get the top grade.
You could do it now.
You say you're channeling Dr. Maggie now.
Yeah.
And I'm going to...
Could do your work from home.
Yeah, could do it. And do you know what I might? And just for anyone listening out there, don't shy away from something that makes your brain tingle because you think you might not get an A grade or a B grade or a C grade. Just go and follow it anyway.
Mm.
And I don't think it would have changed the course of my career, but I'd know more about something that interested me and that's always worth doing.
Computer science and philosophy is what my thing is now that I'm advocating for people to do.
Yes.
Because we're going to need it.
We're going to so need
so
to understand
the, robots don't kill us.
The ethics of the robots
what you're
not
building.
Killing us.
Yeah. Yeah. And logically being like, I'm going to build this system so that people can't troll other people.
I love that. That's
which
fantastic.
I think if Zuck had paid attention a little bit more in philosophy class and wasn't building hot or
do
not.
You know, the thing about... having philosophical and ethical discussions around technology, I think it's phenomenal because I think when you're talking to another person, there's a whole load of emotions get in the way around if you're having conversations about bias. Whereas if you're talking about a bit of software, then it's feelings can't get hurt. And I think it provides just this fantastic space to have a meaningful conversation around what it means to be human and what we want that to be and how we want our technology to reflect
and
that.
And where we draw lines. Or where we enhance the human experience rather than just building an app for our app.
Yeah, I just think that is a fantastic and rich conversation. Mm. And that's the sort of future that I get really excited about for humans. So, boom, good luck with that.
In strategizing and planning for the future at somewhere like GCHQ, which does have to be cutting edge to do what you do properly, how far in advance are you planning for, are you prepping for, are you considering? Like, is there a contingency plan for RoboCop, for example? Or is it kind of slightly shorter time period?
So I have seen many business continuity plans. I've never seen one about RoboCop specifically.
Or UFOs.
Or UFOs.
No.
So I think it's the same with a lot of businesses, is we've got strategies that work at different points. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of got the really, you're thinking really far out about what's coming down the line that we might need to conceive of. Mm. A little bit closer in, you're thinking about actually what serious research is kicking up things like that look like they might really hit. And how would we respond to that? And also how might we might use certain techniques? So the really interesting thing about what we do is things are both opportunities and threats in a really meaningful way. Mm. So we might be able to take techniques and advancements that are emerging to help do our jobs better. But the exact same technology is going to be in the hands of the people who wish to do us harm. Mm. So we've got this real kind of quandary of how do we make use of things as they emerge, but also how do we make sure that we understand how our adversaries might use it, and how what will we need to do differently to keep Britain safe in an era where this is a common technology. And then we face all the same challenges of businesses and departments, which is the emerging technology that's really coming out there, that is happening. How do we integrate that into our business? How do we make sure that people are using it? And then also, how do we respond to our adversaries who are using that tech too?
What's the buzzword that people are most like, oh, how do we apply AI? What we do? How do we apply blockchain? How do we apply drones? I don't know if we should talk about drones, to be honest, but yeah.
It just makes Gatwick sound, yeah. I think. So I think... it's probably fair to say there's a lot of buzzwords, but like everywhere else, we're interested in AI, we're interested in machine learning, we're interested in what that could do for our business. Mm. But I think we're also interested in what it's going to do in the comms world, and in the way that people are interacting with technology, and what does that mean for adversaries and for what they might be up to as well.
You have a museum in the building, which is kind of cool.
I do, yeah. Do you know what? It is tremendous to walk past that on the daily.
Yeah.
And if you're ever feeling a bit like, oh, it's a Monday, go and take a walk past Enigma.
Yeah.
And just realise you're in this building, this tremendous history.
But
and
it's
I just
museum,
looked at actual
it's like
Enigma.
It's like a museum thing. It's not even a... Because you've got like quite a few different artefacts that are there, which I think is kind of random to have in an office, to be fair. The other thing that is quite cool is you do have like an inner sanctum, which I've not been into the inner sanctum.
Oh, a little garden.
No, there's like the next building. I've only been in one of the buildings. It's because it's, I don't know how much of us I can say. Can I say? It's a donut, right? So yeah, people, if you Google it, you can see it. So I guess that's a thing. But there's like an inner circle bit that I have not been in. So I literally haven't been into the inner circle. So to me, that you've got like aliens and dinosaurs and all kinds in there.
Really like it if we had dinosaurs or other prehistoric mammals.
It'd be amazing.
I've not seen them.
No.
We do have a Greggs. Can I say that?
We've got a Greggs inside GCHQ.
Not yet. This has caused like a lot of excitement.
Are they going to have the vegan sausage roll?
I hope so. I need to try that.
Oh my gosh. Next time I come, can we go to the Greggs? How is that? That's so cool. I wish I had a Greggs. You don't even have a Greggs here, the Evening Standard. Is there even the Greggs downstairs? It's High Street Kensington. It's not really Greggs kind of people, is it?
We're Greggs kind of people.
What? Oh, wow. That's amazing. I think we should end on that. There's a Greggs at GCHQ. Unbelievable. I think the closing thought is, I can't believe you've got a Greggs at GCHQ. Oh, yeah, of course. Sorry. Thanks, Beth.
It's
thanks,
been a pleasure.
Bea.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for coming, Beth. Thank you for opening up. And I can't believe you left Greggs till last.
I feel like I should do a last stab of also, if you're interested in a career in STEM, whether or not you've got a technology background, we've got loads of opportunities.
Come
and
join
it's
this
brilliant.
Party. They've got Greggs. That literally is it.
All that's left for you to do is subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. It would also really help us if you rate and review it too. You can follow Beth on Twitter and Instagram at... Only joking, you can't follow her. I don't know if you're listening. But
she's not allowed to be on Twitter or Instagram or anything else. But you can follow her employer, GCHQ, on Twitter and Insta at GCHQ. For the latest news, sport, entertainment and more audio content, visit standard.co.uk. We're Evening Standard on Twitter, and on Insta it's evening.standard. I and Marie live on Twitter at aimafidon, good luck spelling that, and on Instagram at notyouraverageami, which is a little bit easier to spell. Get in touch, have a chat, ask questions using the hashtag WomenTechCharge.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hey marketers, want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.